This is Robert Martellacci of the Mindshare Learning Report, Canada's learning and technology magazine. I have the good fortune of having a Mindshare Learning moment with Ian Fogarty. Ian Fogarty loves teaching chemistry and physics at Riverview High School in Riverview, New Brunswick. He grew up in the school as his father was a teacher extraordinaire at the same school, and now he teaches with his brother, coincidentally. Ian is engaged with Shady Valley International, which is a world prestigious summer program for elite high school students studying science, engineering, entrepreneurship, and leadership. It is helping to build Canada's standard of living by developing young innovators. Every summer, he has the privilege of guiding 60 of these students in his role as co-director at the University of New Brunswick chapter of Shady Valley. Ian is the recipient of the Prime Minister Award of Excellence in Education in 2011. He was a recipient of the Canadian Association of Physics Teacher Award and was the first Canadian to make the podium at Microsoft's Partners in Learning Global Forum. Last but not least, Ian was the winner of the Mindshare Learning National Classroom Video Challenge for Eastern Canada and received great recognition for his excellence in using EdTech in the classroom. Ian, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
No problem. Thank you very much.
Wow. Your awards are numerous and very inspirational to many, I'm sure, across the country and internationally, because we seem to run into each other in a lot of places where leaders are congregating and sharing wonderful skills and experiences using technology in the classroom.
It's been a privilege. I work in a great spot and a place that just cultivates and encourages risk-taking and different kinds of teaching. And so I've been most fortunate to be surrounded by some great people.
Fantastic. So tell me, what inspired you to submit to our contest last year? That was the fifth anniversary of the contest when you submitted. And perhaps you could share with our listeners, as the contest is fast approaching the deadline, Friday, January the 31st, 2014.
Well, I had met somebody, one of the previous winners, from George Street and from St. Andrews, and they had been talking about how they had entered and what their work was from previous contests. And so I started looking at their videos and saw that they were doing some cool and different things. And I thought that because I was a science teacher, I was doing also cool and different things. So I said, if they can win and do well, maybe I should enter as well. And it was kind of cool because as I've been planning on it for about a year, and so as I was thinking about it, I would go through my lesson planning and try and put together a good lesson. But then at the last minute, I would say, I wonder how I would do this with EdTech, and maybe I should videotape it. And so it took this extra step in me to kind of rethink what I did and include some things. So the idea of applying for the contest actually changed my lesson planning in a good way to help me reconsider how I did things a little bit. And so that was kind of a cool thing to showcase what I was doing, but then also improve what I was doing.
That's fascinating because it really caused you to reflect on your teaching practice and how you use the tools that you use. And it's really unique. I think you're one of the first high school teachers to integrate physics and chemistry and very creatively. I was inspired by the fact that you took your students outdoors and they were using their iPhones and different apps to experience movement, physics, going downhill on a toboggan as an example. And that really engages kids and inspires them to want to learn, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's great because we can go and now start applying the physics and the content instead of being word problems and ramps to something that they deal with in their real life. And so the mobile technology has been able to take science outside the classroom quite easily and collect data and do things you couldn't do before. So some of the labs that I did in high school are the same physics, but instead of being a ramp and a piece of cardboard on a lab bench, it's a toboggan hill with lots of fun.
And then the flip side of that, you also use the simulations that you have on your interactive smart boards, and you just happen to have a few in your classroom. You're very fortunate. Not your typical classroom.
I designed a while ago a room that had more than one smart board in it, and I have 7 smart boards, 6 in one room right now. And since then, that's allowed me to do some really cool, interesting things to turn interactive whiteboards, instead of being the typical presenter-teacher tool, into a small group collaboration tool. So I don't use the boards very often. It's students who are using them in small groups. And this seems to be doing some interesting things for the 21st century learning skills, like collaboration and communication and critical thinking, and some good wholesome arguments happen now, which are great for thought process. And so that's been an interesting thing. And since then, it's kind of ballooning. And so when I started, I was the only classroom in the world that had more than one board in the room.
Wow.
And now I think there's up to 60 of them built around the world, modeled after my classroom.
And how are your fellow colleagues in your school coming along in adopting or infusing technology in their teaching practice? I'm sure you've inspired a few of them along the way.
Yeah, because of the video, it gets a little bit of notoriety. And so people who perhaps you'd only talk to as you breeze by the hallway are now all of a sudden having these conversations. So now I have English classes coming into my science room to use my smart boards, and they're talking about peer editing, and they're talking about sentence construction, and they're taking kids who traditionally really struggled in their English and seem to be doing much better because they can have these small group technology-enhanced peer editing groups. And, you know, biology teachers are starting to come in and start looking at simulations. And now we're having conversations with the history class about interactive maps. And kids are now saying, I can use my cell phone in science class. And all of a sudden, they're starting to use them in their math class and in their English class. And so that is kind of spurted in part because of my work, but also because we have some interesting teachers around who want to try some interesting things on their own, too.
That whole spirit of collaboration and breaking down the walls, it seems to be a real trend, and kids taking ownership of their learning. It's exciting times.
Yeah, it's a great situation for people to start texting professors on this and experts on that. And they're starting to get to the point now where they're not needing to be coaxed by me or the teacher. It's starting to become natural for them where they, well, of course, if I don't know an answer, I would start talking to an expert in this area. And I think that's something very different than, you know, I would never have pondered talking on a phone to an expert in a certain area in high school. I would simply rely on the teacher and the textbook.
Right. And that whole notion of, well, crowdsourcing, right? You know, collaboration. It's a fascinating time. We're just putting out our top 10 predictions for 2014 this week. And I think crowdsourcing might make it in there. And it's fascinating. You know, you're not teaching as you did in the past. There's a lot of information that's available online. So just regurgitating facts is not what kids are looking for today, are they?
No. We're starting to look at, you know, instead of tell me what this number is or what that formula is, it's now design something, build something, create a solve a problem of some kind. And so we're doing a lot of work now to try and figure out what that assessment looks like. You know, and what does an exam look like when all kids come into the classroom with a full data plan? You know,
right.
That's not very far away. And what does that look like? You know, and
right.
So we're doing lots of transformation in our classroom, and we're still struggling a little bit with what do our assessments look like. So it's a very exciting time to be involved because we're going to get a chance to shape what the future looks like. It's
congratulations. Perhaps you can offer up, you know, your top 3 tips on what teachers should be looking to infuse in the video submission for our 6th annual contest that closes at the end of the month, January 31st. You know, what would the first tip in your mind be as far as ensuring that they have a submission that is going to make it at least into the top 10?
I think one of the big things is having students, showing students working. Most of my video wasn't me talking at all. It was all about students doing this and students doing that. Students took the videos, students did the editing, students were the subject of the video, and so it was all about having students do the work. So that would be my first tip.
That's an excellent, and to that point, most of the videos that have won in the past have included students collaborating and taking the leadership.
Yeah, so turning into a student project, I think, would be my first step.
Okay, excellent.
My second tip, I think, would be to videotape everything.
That's a lot of video.
Students, when you know you're going to be videotaped, you act differently. And so I knew that when I was going to be videotaping a class, I spent more time thinking about the details of the class. So even if the video got thrown out, my behavior changed in class for the better. And not that I was ill-behaved before.
Right.
But instead, I was more conscientious on trying to find, universal design for learning and making sure that I had all my groups set up and making sure I had this and that and the other thing. It made me go around the room more to find out who was doing what. So it just kind of upped the whole teaching game a little bit, knowing that you're going to be videotaped often. And so then it gave you lots of source to work with, lots of resources to work with.
Great tip. So what are you suggesting, wearing a GoPro in the classroom all day long? There's an experiment for you.
That'd be great. I should do that. Maybe that should be my next grant application.
In fact, you've just given me an idea. We've traditionally given a video camera for the prize. I think we'll include a GoPro this year.
That would be perfect. That'd be
so great, teachers can strap it on their head.
That's right. We'd have to use some sticky Velcro.
Me both. That great second tip. And last but not least.
Oh, gee, I don't know. Other than using a high-quality camera and making sure your equipment is good equipment.
That's a good point. And not rushing it either, right?
Yeah. I think they try and speak 20 minutes in a five-minute video. Hell, is it 5 minutes?
Maximum 5 minutes, but shorter sometimes is more impactful too, isn't it?
Yeah, keep it simple and figure out what it is that you want to say and then say it. Don't try and say five videos and put it into one. Say one thing and then be done with it.
Fantastic. Well, I think if teachers are savvy and they tune into this podcast, they will definitely assure themselves of at least being in the top 10. Thanks to you.
Well, there you go. Well, thank you. That's good.
Well, on that note, I appreciate your time. I know it's the end of the day, and you've got some marking to do, no doubt, and lesson planning.
That's right.
That was Ian Fogarty, award-winning teacher, proud recipient of the Mindshare Learning Video Challenge Eastern Canada Award, based at high school in Riverview, New Brunswick. My name is Robert Martellacci of the Mindshare Learning Report, and until next time, keep the learning curve steep.